Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're with us, wherever you're joining us. If you're joining us on television here in the Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you. And of course, so many of you join us all around the world on all these different platforms. You can check out the YouTube channel, which is relatively new, the podcast, which we've really seen grow. And you can search Good Life Conversations. It's what you want to search on any of the podcast platforms. And so we hope you'll check them out. We're on Twitter, X, whatever it's called. We're trying to be everywhere, and we're so grateful to hear from you. And we're here to bless and serve and encourage and inspire and honor. It's about the good stuff. And so that's why we're here. I always think about this when I think about this program, that we get to choose what we dwell on. And that's an important thing. And that's even something that the scripture talks about is, you know, think about these things. And so we're choosing what we dwell on. And so what we're dwelling on here is the good stuff and great people, great stories. And so we're so grateful that you're a part of it with us, along for the journey. And we're grateful to be here today. Here we're with our great friends, TVSB. We're in their studios. It's a little wet outside, so we have the rare opportunity to be in the studio today, this beautiful studio in Santa Barbara, California. So we're grateful to be here and for our wonderful team that has joined us. So thanks for joining us. I'm so excited about my guests today. They're friends of ours, Sean and Trudy Morris. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So we're going to be talking a lot about this book, and there's a final version of this coming out in the next few weeks, actually, from when we're taping this. But the book is Family Dynasty, and we've been talking about it, and I've been talking with these friends over the last just couple of months since I got to know them, and it's been a powerful, impacting thing, as we were talking about before we came on, to think about something that I haven't thought about before, in all sincerity. And we were talking about how this idea of family dynasty is kind of built into us, I think, and we'll get into that. But what a powerful thing. And so I just commend you on your work. Sean and Trudy have been involved in business, in ministry. They've planted churches, and they've worked with charities. They're consulting. They're working with families. They do a lot of things, and plus they have three kids and basketball stars. It's a whole thing. I don't know if we have enough time, but so people are going to hear your accents. Let's start with the beginning. Take us back to where you're from and how you got here.
Yeah, so we sound completely different, but we're from the same country, South African originally.
Yeah,
I'm from a Dutch family, and okay. Sean is from an English family.
Yes, so of course that's it was really a cultural marriage. It was quite interesting those first couple of years.
Yeah, it was the Boer War all over.
For that, okay. Yes, for all the historians, they'll be familiar with the Boer War, and it was many times Boer War at home.
And what was the beginning of it in the relationship?
Actually, I just moved back to Cape Town, or close to Cape Town, a place called Somerset West, and I'd taken up an associate pastor's position, and then ran a team of young people that were doing ministry on university campuses and high schools, and met a group of young people that were young professionals within the city centre of Cape Town. They all lived there, and they were from different church backgrounds, and they kind of had a Bible study group and a fellowship group, and they asked if I would come along and do a series of teachings. And Trudy arrived the second week we were there, and of course she walked in, and she comes out of the hairdressing fashion world, and at the time she was very well known. She was doing fashion shows with people like Vidal Sassoon and that sort of thing, and I saw this amazing, beautiful woman walk in, but I did think to myself, with my sort of religious framework, is she really a Christian? Because of course, she was dolled up, and she had a crazy hairstyle, only for me to discover that she was actually the most on fire girl I'd ever met in my life, right? For the Lord. And
wow.
Of course, she just captured my heart. But to be truthful, I really thought she was above my pay grade.
Yeah.
I thought there's no way she's going to be
interested.
She was. She was.
Yeah.
She was. Yes. Yeah. And then a year later, we just developed a friendship. And then a year later, I just had a clear word from God. And she was actually heading up a student camp, and our team came to minister at the camp, and it was like, it just hit me. That's my wife.
Wow.
And so I asked to see her, to visit her, personally.
I have to interject there because this is the funny part about it, is that because I was a hairdresser and they didn't have any money, I was the hairdresser that cut all the team's hair. And so one time he looks at me and he says, Trudy, you are really attractive. I just want to give you some advice. If you are looking for a good guy, I think you will have to change your hairstyle first.
Tone it down. Tone it down a little bit. Is that,
yeah. Yeah, I had to eat my own words because literally that next year it was, and it's today if you think about it, it's crazy, but I just knew that's actually, that's my wife. So I said to her, can I come and see her? And the following week, I went to go and see her, and I just thought, I'm going to just get right out there with it. Yeah. And I actually, right there and then,
we had no relationship, no dating,
nothing. I proposed to her right there and then. I said, will you marry me?
Just A to Z. So
I first said, I'll pray about it.
Yeah.
But from the first time I met him, I actually, because I always went out with guys that wanted me, but they didn't really love the Lord.
Yeah.
So I was looking for somebody that was on fire for the Lord.
Yeah.
And so when I saw him first, I thought, now that's the kind of guy that I'm prepared to spend the rest of my life with.
Wow.
So I knew that it was God's choice and I just needed to wait it out. And so even though I responded, I was really shocked. I mean, I went blood red. And then when the sort of shock settled, I moved over and I gave him the kiss of his life.
So I was the one who said a shock.
This is a family show.
Yeah. So there's nothing normal about
that. That was the answer. Boy, you guys are something. So now, quickly, the kids. Take us through these miracle kids. I know, because I want to get... But take us through.
Yeah. So within 6 months, so that was in May, and that December we got married, and we were not able to have children. I did share with Trudy before we got married that I had had a sporting accident that didn't affect intimacy, but affected everything else related to that. And so we were aware of that, but of course we're just full of faith, and God's going to do it.
Many examples in the Bible of barren women, so it's no problem for God.
Yeah, so unbeknownst to us, but we did receive an interesting word about a week before we got married, that we would have a lively son from our own loins. And of course, everybody in the congregation laughed and all knew they were about to get married. I mean, who prophesies that to a young couple that are about to get married? Of course, they're going to have kids. It doesn't take much of a prophet, but the rest of the church had no idea.
Right.
But for us, that word was profound.
Yeah.
It was really something that we then really took to heart, prayed, trusted God. And not long after that, we moved to Austria from Cape Town and pioneered a new work in Innsbruck, the city of Innsbruck. And it exploded. God put his hand in an incredible way and it grew significantly. And we then obviously started the process of trying to have children. It wasn't able to happen. Then we ended up doing IVF, and that's back in the 90s.
Wow.
And we literally took our life savings, sold a motor car. It wasn't covered by medical insurance back in those days. And there was a very, very low possibility. They did say to us, but we just felt led. And I think in hindsight, it really allowed us to finally deal with the hurt in not being able to have children. So it was almost this unspoken thing between us for a period of at least good 5, 6, 7 years till we did that process.
Yeah.
Anyway, it didn't take. We did that a number of times over 2, 3 years. And then we just said, we're just going to enter the rest. And then God
opened up. But we were completely broken because I come from a big family.
Wow.
And absolutely adore children.
Yeah.
So it was just the hardest thing. So we were, as pastors, marrying all these young couples, and they would start families and so on. So it was just an incredibly difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And then in this whole journey of just complete surrender to the Lord, after we did the 3 in vitros, I was having a quiet time with the Lord, and I felt like it was like a visitation. And he said to me, I'm going to perform a miracle concerning children. It's going to be a quick work. It's going to be a girl. She's going to be more like you than your own children. So write this down, because further down the track, you're going to need this promise from me. And so I walk out of my quiet time and I say to Sean, now, if you're pastors and Christians, everybody in the whole world knows what you actually should do to have children. One was like, just love one another, right, you know? I mean, right. Very easy to fall pregnant, yeah, from loving one another. Right. And so Sean said, no, we're not telling anybody. If this is God, we prayed and we said, okay, Lord, if this is you, we're open. Exactly a month later, we were with our best friends in London, and we got the first email from South Africa. Friends of ours, she knew this girl from school days, came to her after a service and said, Justine, as you can see, I'm 7 months pregnant. God spoke to me about this baby, that I need to look for Christian parents, and I haven't been able to find any. Can you pray with me, or can you help me?
Oh my God.
So Justine goes, I don't need to pray. I actually have a couple. They're South African, but they live in Austria. Would you be open for them to adopt your baby? Yes, she says, absolutely. And so she was 7 months pregnant already. So within a space of 2 months, we had to organize an international adoption from Austria, which was like crazy.
Yeah, it was amazing. But we saw the hand of God in a miraculous way.
Yeah, absolutely.
The favor with state departments, with the, you know, immigration of Austria.
The consul general.
The consul general. I mean, it was just, it was literally one miracle after the other. And then the miracle of it all is she fell pregnant again from the same guy. He this time said, let's get married. And again, at 7 months pregnant, he did a runner. And she reached out to us and said, I'm pregnant again. There's no support system in South Africa. You know, what do I do? Would we consider? And what was so incredible, so then little Amber was born, and we had her from birth, like Sabrina, and the same thing. All the same people were in the same positions of authority, the magistrate, the consul general, the same immigration, Minister of Immigration in Austria, who I knew personally, and all these different connections, and we were able to work the same magic,
wow,
so to speak, the same magic. And within an 18-month period, we went from having no kids to having these two beautiful little girls that are actually biological sisters.
And, incredible.
And our hearts were full.
The Lord gave me the scripture in Psalm 126 that says, those who sow in tears will reap with joy, coming back carrying the sheaves. So I always had this picture of two little babies close together, and God truly fulfilled that promise in these two little girls that were only 18 months apart, and our cups were overflowing.
And then, you know, we had the call to Australia, and we decided to then a sabbatical was due us, and we decided to actually make use of that and spend that time in New Zealand. We had a lot of friends. I had an opportunity to do some guest lecturing on one of the universities in leadership there and a number of other doors. So we said, okay, let's go to New Zealand. We'll enjoy a 3-month sabbatical before we head to Sydney and, you know, pioneer do a new church plant. And that was in 2004, a month after we arrived, and Trudy and I are both from, you know, elite sport backgrounds, and so we're still into gym and all the rest to this day. And of course, Trudy's at gym, and I could see I don't know what's going on with me. I've got no energy. It's crazy, you know. And obviously spoke to some medical folk in the church, and they said, oh, you know, at your age, it's probably hormonal imbalance and knowing your history. And I actually dreamt two nights in a row that Trudy was pregnant. And I said, no, you're pregnant.
And if you can't have children, you actually guard your heart. And so when Sean was saying this and I was feeling so terrible, I didn't want to go there, because the hope and despair cycle that you go through when you can't have children is very painful. Oh, sure. So I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And so when I went to the clinic, I said to Mary, who was on duty, I said, Mary, this is our history. So today, if I'm pregnant, it's an absolute miracle. So she looks at the pregnancy test and she goes, oh, well, I'm looking at a miracle. And at the ripe age of 40, I fell pregnant with this lively son that God promised us 17 years before.
17 years later.
Yeah, and we had Jaden when I was 41.
Oh my goodness.
So we call them our three miracle children.
They are. They really are.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. Well, that is a story by itself.
And then I do want to just build in the name Jaden is just something that I had the name like 17 years ago. And by the time I then fell pregnant, I said to Sean, maybe this name is no longer, you know, relevant. Maybe we must look for something new. And then Sean, after we went for the 20-week scan and they saw it was a little boy, we walked out and Sean said, we're going to call him Jaden. And I didn't know because in my Bible it said righteous ruler. But my mother-in-law said, do you know what Jaden actually means? It means God has heard.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So God heard the cry of our hearts.
Of the name Jaden. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Wow. Wow. I want to dive into this because we're going to run out of time. So Sean, introduce us. Take a minute just to introduce this idea. Can you do that?
Yes. Well, obviously, being in the ministry for, you know, being senior pastors and church planters for 35 years, more than 35 years now, but that period of time, the heartbreak is when you see families disintegrate. You see the prodigals, you see the next generation not engaging the faith. And that really became a desperate cry in our hearts. And I said, Lord, somehow we're missing something. And then secondly, through that journey in consulting, then economics, socioeconomic consulting, first of all, corporations, international businesses, led us to eventually then also consulting in city and community transformation. And we began to see some great impact, but the problem was every time there was an election cycle or even a business cycle, you know, the regular changeover, CEOs, etc., as well as the election cycle, it was like we had to start over again. Reestablish relationships, get everybody moving again, continue the journey. And I again was saying, Lord, where's the sustainable capacity to bring and sustain that change? Mm-hmm. I realized by then that the church is primarily there to create an environment of healing, restoration, and training and equipping and releasing. But the church in itself is not really the vehicle that's ideally created to actually bring forth the governance of God in the earth in that manner and in that transformational element. It's the members of the church, the body of Christ, yes, but what's the construct, what's the framework?
Right.
And of course, really then understanding that it's the sons of God, the huios, the mature sons of God, and wrestling with this. And I clearly remember that God really took me back to my own story. But in that process, God really did something really deep, healed my relationship with my father and then with my brothers, and then said, if this works, then it has to work in our family first. And really what God did was he took me back to the beginning. He said, nothing's changed. Go back to the ancient way, the pattern. And I kept on saying, pattern? What do you mean the pattern? And finally, I realized I need to go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. And God blessed them. This realization of the framework and understanding that it's the patriarchal, matriarchal partnership and alignment that create this framework that is perfectly ideal to bring forth an intergenerational construct called family in the ideal divine design of God that has the capacity to both grow in maturity, strength, and in influence, that it could bring forth the blessing of God in the earth, i.e. subdue, bring order, as we know in the Hebrew word, to subdue means to literally bring in order, bring the order, and then you shall have dominion. So then it's not dominion, it's not given. Dominion, in essence, is the result of us bringing forth the kingdom in the earth in a manner that really glorifies him and restores the divine order of things as it was meant to be. But the primary vehicle is the family. And I go, oh my word, I'm a church pastor, I'm a church planter. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's the church. No, it's the family. And then realizing that really the church is the spiritual oikos, correct. Yeah. And it's the family, it's a family of families. But the real ideal is the family. And then I did this research from Genesis to Revelation, did a huge deep dive over a number of years. I really wanted to make sure I understood theologically, understood the heart of God. And then, of course, the real light bulb moment was when I realized that the very Trinity itself, God himself, is a generational family. It's the Father, it's the Holy Spirit, and it's the Son in perfect union and alignment, not a multi-generational legacy mindset of passing on the baton, but collectively together at the same time, they are so unified, they are one, and then bringing us forth as his children, and then it hit me, dynasty. You know, dynasty, and the difference between legacy and dynasty then became so crystal clear to me. You know, legacy is noble, it's awesome, it's a great start in the beginning because it means that you're thinking beyond your own personal immediate consumption. And so you're thinking, but legacy in essence, we frame it this way. We say legacy is what you deposit in and what you leave for the generations. Dynasty is what you build with the generations. So it's an immediate integration across at least three generations. And so there's this alignment, understanding that families have a mandate from God. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 14 and 15, I bow my knee before the Father, from whom every family is named. Now the word every is also translated whole in the Greek as both and. So it's not an either or, it's a both and. But this realization, every family. Why are bloodlines so important to God? Why is family so critical? And it's beyond just merely the nuclear family. It's this transcendent divine design, I believe, of that truly intergenerational family that develops the maturity and capacity over generations. Mm-hmm. And from a holistic wealth, we call it total wealth, not just financial wealth, but the total wealth being well-being of the family that is then positioned to actually bring forth the kingdom in a way that otherwise could never be realized.
Wow.
And so in essence, that led us then to the journey, and we then applied it into the families of the cities and communities we were working with. And oh my word, it was as if the lid came off. Capacity, first of all, the restoration in those families.
Yeah.
Prodigals coming home like we had never seen in 35 years of ministry. It was profound.
Wow.
These prodigals, their sense of belonging, their sense of identity, the transcended purpose of the family now framing their purpose.
That's a vision.
That's a vision. The family vision, that family mandate.
Yeah.
Every family has that from God. And then living that out in the generations and the prodigals coming home, being unlocked in this, the restoration of families, and then its engagement with the communities that they found themselves in or felt called to minister to. We saw things happen that I thought would take 30, 40 years. We began to see things happening in like 5 years, 10 years that were... That were truly, I mean, miraculous.
Yeah.
And yet, I was like, Lord, this was the pattern all along. And if you think about it, after the fall, what did God do? He reinstated that same cultural/dominion mandate. Even though the fall happened, he added one component to it to protect the sanctity of life. After the flood, he says almost word for word the same thing to Noah and his family. Then Abraham comes along, our father of the faith, and what he takes it to a whole nother level, prophesying what Jesus was going to actually do and restore in its full manifestation. And he says, in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed.
Wow. If you go and, back, and the lineage in Matthew and all that.
And that's right. Thank you. You hit the nail on the head. Why is the lineage all recorded?
Yeah.
How important is it?
I always wondered that.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Now you know.
Yeah. That's a powerful vision that everybody needs. If you're going to sit down, if number one, I want to say it's never too late. It's never too late. So how do you unpack who you are as a family? How do you sit down and go, who are we? Who are the Joneses? You know, how do you, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming part of it's gifting or part of it's calling or words.
Yes.
But how do you do that?
Well, the revelation that God really gave Trudy one time.
I'll just share that we were in a prayer meeting, and the Lord said to me, Trudy, what is stronger, the curse or the blessing? So I said, of course the blessing, Lord. So he says to me, so why do you, with the families that you're involved in and that you're always praying for, the needs, why do you always keep the curse at bay and just sort of survive from the one prayer meeting to the other, and there's actually very little victory? And I said, that's true, Lord. And he said to me, so why don't you look at the power of the blessing that goes to 1,000 generations? And why don't you at your prayer meeting start praying for you as families to see what are the redemptive blessings in your bloodlines that the enemy actually tried to, through shame, squash.
Right.
Or cover it in such a way that that's the shame, but there's so much more to what you have and what you've inherited from your bloodlines. Tap into that, bring it into the present, and then your prayer meetings start changing for your families, where you start looking at, wow, this is who we were. This is what God has used us to advance the kingdom. And from this point, I want to create in prayer the places that our children want to walk into that has already been predestined before the foundation of the world by Christ, so that they can go and take dominion. And not just because we as parents then want our children to follow in our footsteps and want to be a pastor or want to be a businessman, whatever this is, but we release them completely, because the way in which our families can infiltrate all spheres of society to bring kingdom advancement is so much bigger and wider than what we can think for our children. And then we partner with Jesus so that we prepare the ways for our children to truly, wherever God calls them, to be a kingdom advancer, to bring people back to the knowledge of who they were, what they were called to do, and to fulfill their family mandate in the earth and glorifying God through that as a family.
You married way up. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so in light of that, it was really, we help families rediscover their story.
Yeah.
So the family that was, and that speaks to actually, and it's amazing how it pops.
Is there a mantle? I mean, I believe that.
Like, yes,
mantle.
There is a mantle.
Absolutely.
And that's what comes to light.
Yeah.
And you can see it. And even the profound nature of why there's an intersection with two bloodlines, i.e. your wife and yours, for this specific time, at this moment in history, in God's story, what's that narrative of those two families and why at this moment, and what does it have to do within the present? So then we help families really discover what we call then the transcendent kingdom purpose and mandate of the family. So through that process, it begins to, and then working with the present realities of their giftings, callings, etc., it becomes almost self-evident. It's the most beautiful thing
to
watch.
And so you help families walk through.
We help families walk through.
Yeah, you need to call them.
And then what we do is then we say, okay, now we actually take you through a process where we capture the mandate, let's help you frame your unique core values, understand what your family practices are, the traditions that were, what you want to continue to frame and house rules and pathways. And then the final piece is we reestablish the table. And that is so critical. That is the huge piece that brings the prodigals almost always back home.
Yeah.
And the table is really the reinstatement. It's birthed out of that deep conviction of Psalm 123, that he prepares a table for me. Psalm 23. He prepares a table for me where? In the very presence of my enemies. So the table is so profound and significant in its capacity of authority, strength, rest, and feasting that it doesn't have to be hidden. It's not insecure. The table is so profoundly secure that it is established in the very presence of my enemies.
Yeah.
And realizing that the table is all about the family.
Yeah.
First of all, our table with the Lord
ties
us in. We're adopted into the family of God. And then what does that actually mean then for my own family?
Absolutely.
And then as we restore, and we have a process that we take through where every single member, their names, the meanings of the names, any prophetic words, promises, truly creates a craft of prayer around every single member of the table, help families create pathways of growing those heirs, restoring them back to the table if they're prodigals, if it's broken, etc. And that sets the family then on a trajectory that they never ever could have imagined or anticipated.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. What a great deal.
Yeah.
And this, and the world understands this at some level. I saw in here, you know, you're talking about the most influential men, women, and families in the world, that they function as dynasties. Just total non-believers can operate because it's kingdom principles, right?
That's right.
Exactly right.
I mean, so this is actually, it's not like this is new under the sun in terms of, but it's powerful. And when put into practice like this, it's obviously works.
We truly believe it's revolutionary.
Yeah.
You unleash a
people don't
capacity.
Think like this.
Yeah, no, they don't.
And I think it's a lost a promise that we as Christians is actually given to the world, that they are using for in many ways for evil.
Right.
And so how can we, as Christian dynastic families, take back what the enemy has stolen?
Right. Yeah.
And with the clout that we have with God behind
real
us.
Real power.
How
dunamis.
Can, yeah, dunamis, exactly.
And it's so interesting you mentioned the word dunamis because, you know, as God would have it, I end up on a flight to Melbourne and who sits next to me? A professor of classical Greek from the University of Athens, who was a Greek Orthodox believer, and he says, you know, and he said, oh, we start the conversation, and then he says to me, oh, yes, no, so you're part of that sort of, you know, the contemporary modern church, and he said, yeah, there's something that really irks me about the modern church, the Western contemporary modern church. I said, what's that? He said, two things, how you interpret the word ecclesia, okay, and then of course he explained it's a legislative assembly and it's a governmental structure, and why the Western church has failed to have governmental influence is because they don't train their people to understand that it's about governance, not just merely about presence, you know. And so he's unpacking this whole thing, and then he's, and I said, what's the second word? And he says, dunamis. I said, what do you mean? And so I'm already wrestling with this whole thing of dynasty, and he says, well, dunamis is the root word for dynastia, which is literally the Greek word for dynasty. And he says the whole understanding is God is a family. He's creating a family, and the word dunamis was a word that was used very specifically in when there was a transference of dynastic power and authority to the next generation.
Yes.
Historically, and I go, oh my word.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. And I'm sitting next to him. It's like God just kind of dropped an expert. And of course, then he got me onto a whole thing. And I'm writing notes. And I'm like, on the plane. And then I get back. And of course, then we, you know, I said, am I right? And I grab a bunch of theologians and a couple of people that I knew that were also trained in Greek and, you know, biblical Greek. And I'm saying, am I onto something? And everybody came back and said, Sean, you're...
That's it was a word from the Lord.
It was a word from the Lord.
Absolutely.
And so it's interesting that you mentioned that word dunamis. And I think there's an element of the dunamis of God that we are failing to walk in as the Church of Jesus Christ, because we're not building dynastic households.
Well, as we're not thinking about this and the blessing, we're just trying to deal with our problems every week and push away the curses.
Yeah.
That's a powerful idea.
And good the blessing grief. Is really purely mathematically. The curse goes to what? The fourth generation. The blessings is to 1,000.
Right.
So you think about just purely mathematically, the blessings are 250 times more powerful than the curse.
Yeah.
In its generational impact.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Bring them down.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh my goodness, we could talk for hours. Okay, so what's the website that the book is going to be on, the revised version?
Family Dynasty. .co. Yes.
FamilyDynasty.co. Sean and Trudy Morris. The book is Family Dynasty. It's coming soon. I encourage you to check it out. The family's under attack, obviously.
We'll
don't have to be a brain surgeon. Yeah. I mean, think with what you're talking about and the power and the love and the grace and the goodness. Of course, the family's under attack.
That's right.
Of course, marriages are under attack. Yeah. That's where the power is.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. Makes a lot of sense when you think about it in that context.
Exactly.
But having a vision calls everybody forth.
It does.
Yeah.
And I think the vision's lacking. That's my takeaway. I'm going to read
this.
Yeah. I really love it. Love everything about this. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
It's been such a joy and a pleasure.
What a great deal. Thank you. Family Dynasty, Sean and Trudy Morris, everybody. We'll see you next time.